The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. Sponsored by Raiden Solicitors. Award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
Good evening and welcome to The Parents Show here on Mix 92.6. The Parents Show was recently invited to attend a fireside talk held at Gorhambury House here in St Albans. The subject of the talk was one very dear to all parents' hearts, screens and childhood. So our presenter, Elisa, went along with Co-Mix 92.6 marketeer Jez Dutton to capture the thoughts of the organiser, Viscountess Rosie Grimston, and the speakers, Sophie Winkleman and Claire Ferniehoff. Held in the beautiful and ornate Gorhambury House, the talk attracted many local parents, and Elisa began by asking Rosie for an overview of the talk. Please note that this interview contains mentions of mental health and suicide. Listener discretion is advised. If you or anyone you know is suffering, please consider contacting organisations such as the Samaritans, who can be reached on 116 123.
Hello, my name is Rosie Grimston and I live at Gorhambury, and we've started to put on these really awesome events here, Fireside Talks. And this is the second, it's on screens and it's been very stimulating.
Thank you so much, Rosie. And what inspired you in particular to put on this talk around screen-based childhood and ed tech and social media and smartphones and all the issues that exist with that? What inspired that for you?
I think I'm a parent of a 15-year-old, 14-year-old and 11-year-old. And you can't not be interested in this sphere if you have children that age.
And what are your personal views and beliefs in this? Do you think we should be having smartphones out of schools? Should there be age restrictions?
I would really love, and one of the great things that we're trying to call for tonight, which would be epic if we achieve it, is to try and persuade all schools in Hertfordshire. So this is a call to all schools in Hertfordshire to introduce brick phones for year seven and to cascade that up as long as they can. Because I think our kids really deserve the opportunity to think deeply, to have a childhood that is more, yes, I think it's gone too far the other way. Their lives are spent on screens now and they need a break from it, particularly when they're at school.
And tell us about the speakers and the people we had in the room tonight.
So we had, leading us was Sophie Winkleman, and she has been an amazing campaigner on this front. She's a very funny actress, hugely compelling, and so it made tonight very engaging and great fun. She has been raising a red flag for this, what she sees as pernicious introduction of ed tech into general education and into the classroom, and was imploring all teachers to think about what they really need to have, the balance, I suppose, in education. And then we had Claire Ferniehoff, and she was one of the founders of the Smartphone Free Childhood movement. She's incredibly charismatic and it has been an amazing grassroots movement. She's now moved into the school sphere more with her latest campaign, Generation Focus, trying to persuade all schools to become genuinely smartphone free.
And it was important to you to also ensure we had school leaders and school staff in the room. Why was that?
They are on the front line and they are seeing exactly what's happening. And I wanted to make sure that their voices were heard as well. There are some who are very on board with the idea of removing smartphones from school, but see more benefits to ed tech and to that being part of the general education. And I wanted to hear what their views were on that, whether they agree with some of the concerns that Sophie was raising. And it seemed to be really quite a mixed bag, which made for a very interesting evening, very interesting talk.
Gorhambury is such a historic and symbolic setting for this. Can you tell us more about the estate and your kind of vision for how you're going to develop it? Because I hear you're going to be putting on more of these fireside talks.
Yeah, so the fireside talks are to keep everyone entertained in the winter. The house is absolutely beautiful. It has been emerging like a butterfly from the chrysalis after 10 years of renovation. It was a really, really big building project. And we had to keep the house open anyway during those restoration years, which was a challenge but great fun. We had hard hat tours, but we're now ramping up the events, and we have great things on in the summer. We have retreat days here. We are celebrating the life of Sir Francis Bacon quite a lot this year and the 400 year anniversary of his death. But if you have a look on our events page, you'll see there's a huge variety of different things.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for putting on such an inspiring event this evening.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for coming.
After the talk, Elisa caught up with one of the speakers, Claire Ferniehoff, founder of the smartphone-free childhood movement, and asked her about the current concerns of parents on what their children are viewing or reading and how this environment is changing for children all the time.
Hello, my name is Claire Ferniehoff. I'm a psychologist and I'm also a campaigner. I co-founded the smartphone-free childhood movement and I now lead Generation Focus, which is all about getting phones out of schools.
Excellent. Thank you so much. This evening, we've been hearing from you and Sophie Winkleman at the Gorhambury Estate about screens and smartphones, social media, and also edtech. It's been a fascinating conversation, and we'd love to share some of those insights with our listeners too. So Claire, through the smartphone-free childhood movement and now Generation Focus, what are the most common concerns you're hearing from parents right now?
I think there's a few different areas. There's firstly the content that we're now only beginning to realise what kids are actually seeing. They're seeing very different stuff to what we as parents are seeing on our algorithms. So we hear on a daily basis of, you know, 12-year-olds seeing violent pornography. The average 15-year-old has definitely seen suicide. You know, it's really horrific stuff that actually as parents we don't see. And if we did, we'd be really, really, you know, disturbed by it. So it's that traumatic content that really impacts kids. I think what we were really interested in talking about today is actually the changing nature of childhood. We know that childhood's being rewired. We know that these devices provide a huge opportunity cost. They displace all the stuff that kids should be doing, reading, playing, interacting face to face. It's literally blocking their development in these areas because these screens are too addictive, aren't they? Let's be honest. You know, we as adults, we can't put our phones down. How do we expect kids to? So it's kind of what it's doing to childhood and what it's taking away. Because at the end of the day, if childhood is just time, you know, the average child is now spending 30 hours a week on their phone. That is the equivalent of a part-time job, and it is displacing all the things we know they desperately need to be doing to develop properly as a child.
And it's a really tricky situation for parents and for school leaders. What would your kind of message, I guess, for school leaders be in terms of how they can support parents and how they can support the health and well-being of the children in their schools?
Yeah, so if you're leading a primary school, it should be an absolute no-brainer. Smartphones should not be brought to school. There is no place for smartphones in a primary school. And I know a lot of the primary schools in St Albans, for example, are now completely smartphone-free, and that's fantastic. At a secondary level, frankly, the same applies. You know, ban smartphones completely. That sends a message to parents, and it supports parents in delaying, which is what almost every parent wants to do. But it's very hard as a parent to send your child to secondary school having delayed, not given them a smartphone if everyone else has got one. So if you can just ban phones, even just for year seven from this coming September, join together with all the other secondaries in the county and just say, look, let's just do this together. Safety in numbers. It's so much easier when you all act together. And actually, it's achievable. It's just 1 year. You're not taking phones away from kids who've already got them. You're just warning the parents, this is what we're doing. We've seen this has an enormous impact on communities, and it allows schools and parents to support each other to reclaim childhood really from big tech.
And how can, so you're working with schools now, as your role with Generation Focus, how, if school leaders are interested in having these conversations and getting support from you, how would they go about doing that?
Yeah, so check out our website, generationfocus.org. We've got a really powerful head teacher toolkit there, which takes you through every step of how to get rid of phones. We've walked the walk with hundreds of head teachers in the last year, so we really have all the answers to the implementation and the pushbacks you might get. And get in touch, hello@generationfocus.org. We're really happy to support. And one of the things we love most is to bring head teachers together and you know, get them to kind of, yeah, just do it all together and take collective action, because we are in a collective action problem and we need a collective action solution.
Wonderful. And for parents just feeling totally caught in that tension, that impossible decision and the pressure that they're getting from peers and other parents, what would your message be for them? Like, how can we empower parents to make these decisions?
I think, know that you're not alone. Like, this is incredibly hard. This is the hardest decision parents have to make. But listen to the parents who've already given phones. Most of them regret giving it as young as they did. And know that actually, if you do delay giving a phone, you will not be the only one. You know, the Smart and Free Childhood Pact, you can come together and all sign that together. And just delay together. We know that once the phones are there, they're very, very hard to take away. They are completely addictive. They are not necessary for children. They just aren't. So stand firm. You may not be your child's best friend for a few weeks, but ultimately they will really, really thank you.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Claire. And thank you for all the work you're doing. It's absolutely inspiring.
Pleasure. Thank you. Good to be here.
Next, Elisa spoke to the other speaker, Sophie Winkleman, about her views on getting back to a more book-based approach to learning in the classroom instead of using digital tablets and devices.
My name is Sophie Winkleman. I'm an actress and I am fighting digital education, which has swept into our classrooms since COVID. And I think we need a return to books and teacher-led learning.
You talk so in an impassioned way. I can see this means so much to you. What inspired you to take the lead with this campaign?
I think I saw that children weren't learning well on screens. I'm lucky enough to be able to visit lots of schools in several roles, including one as a patron of an education charity. I saw with my own children how badly they learned during lockdown on screens. And I started putting feelers out, and I now have a massive, great network of people who are very angry that their children are on iPads and Chromebooks for most of the school day.
What would you say to school leaders or parents or chairs of governors' boards about, in terms of the positive aspects of technology and the kind of difficulty in rolling back from that very technology-focused space that we find ourselves in now?
I would say ask the subject teachers what's beneficial about the platforms the schools have installed, what's really, truly helping children. I think some ed tech is useful for teachers, the teacher-facing ed tech, where they can plan lessons and they can get some marking done, do some safeguarding stuff. Teachers are very overworked and exhausted. That can be useful. Some tech can be useful in maths. Some of it can be useful for dyslexic children. Not all of them. I think some dyslexic children are very well served by handwriting more, not less, spelling mistakes allowed. I just think a much more sceptical lens has to be put on what we're doing here, because schools and boards are being lobbied by these very powerful companies saying this is going to supercharge your education, it's going to save you a lot of money. And not enough research is being done into whether it's actually beneficial for children. And now research is showing all over the world that it's really damaging for children to be on screens for their education for so much of the school day. It's physically very unhealthy. Being on a screen is bad for children's eyesight. It gives them headaches. It's bad for their sleep. They go to sleep later if they've been on a screen too much. It's bad for their spinal formation. It even disrupts teen hormones. There is something really unhealthy about too much screen learning. I would say put some skepticism on these companies. I'm an advocate for technology education. Of course, children should learn how this stuff works in IT lessons. Like we used to have computer lessons, you can learn everything you need in IT lessons. Where it bleeds into every other subject, this is just big business talking. This is ed tech is big tech in a school uniform. The tech giants do not send their children to schools where they're on screens all day. The tech is unbelievably moderate and for a tiny proportion of the school week. Children have to learn to think deeply and they need to learn to focus and read. That is how children's brains grow.
Thank you, Sophie. Our listeners are mainly parents in St. Albans and surrounding areas, and St. Albans announced its intention to become smartphone free for under 14s. What is your message for our local parents? What can they do? This feels like a big task, a big overwhelming challenge. We know collective action can make a big difference. What would your message be to our parents?
Well, first of all, mega congratulations to your parents, because St. Albans is probably the leading area in Britain for saying no to smartphones. It's stunning. You're leaders in this sphere of the digitalisation of children. Keep leading and now turn your attention to screens in classrooms. It's going to be a hard battle to fight because a lot of money has been spent and some teachers are getting used to the relative ease of children being online and AI doing the marking. But most teachers don't really like it, and it's not a healthy way for them to connect with the children, and children go off task and it's boring for teachers to have to stop children being on YouTube and go back to their maths assignment. It's not It's not a healthy way for a classroom to work. So just start having the conversation like you did with smartphones, even if you're a parent like I was, believe it or not, who didn't really need a huge WhatsApp group full of opinionated parents. I didn't want to be part of that. I'm afraid you have to change. You have to get everyone's numbers, say, we've done smartphones, now we're going to do school iPads. Why are our kids on screen so much of the day? Take it to the chairs of governors, take it to the heads, ask for evidence for where this stuff is beneficial. You won't find much. Take that fighting spirit and put it into the realm of classroom screens.
Thank you, Sophie. The work you're doing is amazing. Thank you on behalf of our listeners and our children.
Thank you very much for having me. Good on you guys.
There were also some children at the talk, and Elisa met three of them. They gave their views on the talk and also their own feelings about smartphones and classroom technology. They gave both counter and supportive arguments to the points raised in the talk, and this rounded off the evening nicely.
Hi, my name is Violet and I'm 11 years old.
Hi, my name's Chloe and I'm 14 years old.
I'm Nicole and I'm 14 years old.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for talking to us today. So tonight we've had the fireside talk at Gorhambury Estate on screens, smartphones, social media, and we would love to hear from you what you thought about the talk. So Violet, would you start?
Yeah, I thought it was quite biased. It did, I think... there was not much counter arguments showing the other side of the argument, but I do agree with some of the concepts, but I would say that some of it wasn't very true and it was using statistics I didn't quite agree with.
Okay. Which bits did you feel that weren't true and you just didn't agree with?
I feel that it was like every 15-year-old has seen a suicide on social media. Like my friends coming home, they're almost 15 and they haven't seen any social media suicide things or anything.
So it felt quite kind of dramatic in a way. Okay. So do you have a phone at the moment?
I do have a phone and so does she.
Yeah. And kind of what things do you have on your, do you have social media on your phone?
Yeah, myself and Nicole have social media, but we don't use it to post or anything like that. We just use it to see our friends and to do what we want with it.
Okay. Which social media platforms do you use?
We use a bit of everything. We like to use Roblox when we play with Violet, but we mainly use like TikTok and like WhatsApp with like our family and things.
Yeah. And do you feel there is a problem with smartphones and social media in children your age?
I think everything has a balance, and for some people there can be problems, but like for myself personally, I don't think there is a problem. If you don't have the control, then there is a problem, but not really.
Okay, thank you. And how about you? What are your kind of thoughts and perspectives on this?
I just think that everyone's different and some people are really able to control themselves when it comes to phones and like balancing their school life with it, and they are able to put it down when they know that it's time to concentrate in school. But some people need a bit of support of like screen time limits, having their phones put in pouches or something like that at school. But obviously everyone's different and it depends on how you, if you're at home, if you have full access to your phone all the time or if you get it limited at home as well.
Okay, and so do you have limits on your phone? Is that how, what helps you manage it, or are you able to do it yourself?
I've never really had a limit on my phone because my parents have always trusted that I will put it away, and I usually do. Obviously when I have like, if I have a big test or something tomorrow, my mum might like take it and put it downstairs just to ensure, but I've never really done anything. She knows that I'll just put it away when I'm about to go to sleep or when I know that I need to have some time to study and do other things.
Wonderful, thank you so much. And so Violet, do you have a phone?
No, I don't have a phone at the moment.
You have a brick?
I mean, I do have a brick phone, but it's not quite the same. I would really like to get a phone, and I feel like I do have the self-control to manage it. Some children don't, and I think the thing that I didn't really like about that whole fireside talk was that there was huge generalization in it. Like it was all like all children 15, all of this. I get you kind of have to generalize a bit in those types of contexts, but I think I have self-control and we all do.
Okay. And have you had discussions with your parents about when you might get a smartphone or have access to social media?
Yeah, they said when I'm 13.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Is there anything else any of you would like to share with our listeners? Because we have mainly parents listening, so they would love to hear from younger people.
I would just like to say, with like school is using laptops instead of books, I actually agree that it should be books instead of laptops, because sometimes it can be quite hard to work around. Like with me, I've never, because my last school, we didn't really use them. We used iPads sometimes, but not really. So sometimes I save it to the wrong place. And then when I go back to go find stuff, it's really quite hard. And also my mum is like logged into my account. So when she tries to help me revise, she just doesn't really understand how to use it. However, she would just prefer if it was an actual book. And some of my lessons, they do offer using books, but everything's set up on the device. So you kind of just expected to use it, but I would prefer a book. I just find it easier.
That's really interesting. I have a 14-year-old daughter and I'm trying to support her with her science GCSE. And I'm finding it quite hard to navigate all the online websites I've been taken to. And so I keep going to the textbook because at least it's a defined amount of content to learn. And then that's the end of it, right? Rather than the whole World Wide Web. Yeah. Did you have something?
Yeah. Also, when I've been trying to study for some tests because I've had my 11 plus ISCBs moving on to the next school, I found that like it's quite hard because with lots of statistics, it shows different things for different people, trying to persuade them, I don't know, to use more time, which means that you might not get the actual statistics, which I found, which was a bit annoying.
Yeah, definitely. And how about you in terms of kind of ed tech or books and paper?
I think there's a huge balance between it. I think the internet's great for like Googling, because sometimes books just don't give you the answer you're looking for. But I do think books are great because sometimes like the internet, like you have to be so specific. Like when you're revising for GCSEs, you have to put the exam board, you have to put everything that you need. Otherwise, it will just give you irrelevant information. So when you have a book, it's just like definitive. But I also feel as well, it's not right for schools to so much as restrict phones, because this is the way of the generation and they should be supporting you and how to manage it rather than just restricting it, because they're supposed to be preparing you for the adult world where there isn't going to be restrictions and you should know how to control yourself by that point.
So I feel like you girls feel quite strongly about this topic.
I think it's just become so much of our world now. Everyone communicates through a phone. I have loads of friends in other countries and there's no way that I would be able to communicate with them, and they're really close friends of mine. If I didn't have some sort of communication with them, it just wouldn't be great, because realistically, I'm not going to be sending letters to them. It just would take far too long. So I do agree, we don't need them in schools so much, because the only reason you'd ever need them in school is in case of emergency, but obviously you could just have a brick phone. But I think in just normal communication with your friends, setting meetings up, if like you just want to go out with them, it's kind of just easier to just send a quick message. I think you should just be able to trust yourself with one instead of going through a parent every time.
Thank you so much, girls. That was so interesting. I feel like we could do a whole nother fireside just with children and their voice. Thank you so much.
Finally, we leave the last word to Sophie Winkleman, who tells us what she thinks parents should be doing in regard to edtech in schools.
So I just want people to start questioning their schools and saying, tell me how this iPad is better than some books. Just explain to me how this application is better than what I used to do. And usually it really isn't. And I'm sorry for teachers. They're very overworked. They're exhausted. And I'm fine with teachers using some AI to help them design lessons, help them with a bit of marking in non-humanities-based subjects. But if we're going to stick a screen-shaped plaster on the problems of our education system, it's not going to serve anyone. Old-fashioned teachers who loved having a connection with a child and lighting a candle in them are very upset about the digital tsunami in our classrooms, and they're leaving. Younger teachers who are trained in edtech and teach in college are fine with it. But often, a teacher is the most important human being in a child's life. So why are we relegating them from sage on the stage to guide on the side? That's what is happening at the moment. And we're letting massive business win over what's right for our children. And we need to look at our education system and say, classes are huge, teachers are exhausted, there's behavioural problems, often, you know, exacerbated by social media. Look at those structural problems and invest in more human beings. We need to pay teachers more. We need to give them supportive teaching assistance. The answer has to be human.
Our grateful thanks to Rosie Grimston and her team for inviting Mix92.6's The Parent Show to the event, and also to Claire Ferniehoff and Sophie Winkleman for speaking to us. We hope that this programme has given you some food for thought on this ongoing and hugely important subject. You can find out more about these events at Gorhambury House and the Fireside Talks on their website, gorhambouryestate.co.uk. It's really worth attending these events at such a beautiful and historic venue. We'll take a quick break now here on The Parent Show on Mix 92.6, but we'll be back soon, so stay tuned.
The Parent Show on Mix 92.6, sponsored by Raiden Solicitors, award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to The Parent Show on Mix 92.6. I'm Elisa Carcar, bringing you honest conversations to support and inspire you as we navigate this wild parenting journey together. Today, I'm joined by Clementine, the founder of Elevated by Clementine, where she supports women to reconnect with themselves through a unique blend of personal transformation and style. We're going to chat about her journey, what led her into this work, how motherhood can impact our sense of identity and confidence, and how she supports women, especially mums, to feel more like themselves again. Clementine, thank you so much for joining me today. Hey. It's wonderful to have you. So let's start. Can you tell us a bit about yourself and what you do?
Yes, thank you. I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. So I'm Clementine. As you can probably hear, I'm French. So sorry for the thick accent in advance. I'm a stylist. I'm many things, just like mums and mothers. I am absolutely many things. I am a CrossFit athlete. I am an author. I specialize in well-being teaching as well. And I am a stylist and ex-marketing corporate girly. So I do many things. I have different hats and I have created Elevated to help support women inside and out. So yes, I studied in Paris, in New York. I worked in Paris, London and New York. So I have a lot of experience across different countries, lots of experience with lots of different amazing people that just inspired me and refined my style and my aesthetics. And this is what I bring now to my styling when I help these amazing women to become the best version of themselves.
Amazing. And now we have you here in St. Albans.
And I'm here in St. Albans and Hertfordshire, absolutely. And I'm loving it out there. It's a welcome change from big cities, the noise and the overwhelm. I would have never believed one day I would end up in what I call the countryside, but I'm loving it. This is where I feel my best. It's perfect for my well-being. It's perfect for my family. I feel like it's the right place where we can unwind, do our business and spend quality time with people around us. And we're not too far from London either. So for me, St. Albans is the best place in the world.
Oh, amazing. I'm sure our parents will be really resonating with that.
Yeah.
And so your journey has taken you from Paris to New York to St. Albans. And what's led you to this work? What's inspired you? Where does this passion come from?
So I've always had this passion since I have been a little kid. When I was at school, I was drawing outfits and evening looks, and I was selling them to my friends at recess in exchange of coins and cash made on paper. So I always had this passion to be fully myself and to express myself through clothes. This is why I decided to study fashion. I did a stylist and modelist bachelor degree in Paris. I won the award at the end for my collection that I created with five looks and a whole buying plan to commercialize the collection. So I've always really been passionate about creating beauty and making it accessible to all and creating something that's you can implement tangibly into your life and just help you be the best version of yourself. So yeah, and then I went to New York. I studied fashion management at the Berklee College of New York. And then once I came back, I went to Paris, did my luxury marketing MBA, specialized in fashion, and arrived in London and started working in fashion, in marketing. But I was still doing some personal styling on the side because it's always what has been my true passion. And yeah, and today I, after years in marketing, not being happy, not feeling fulfilled, I've just decided to follow my true passion and what I'm really good at and follow my purpose, which is literally helping women feel beautiful inside and out. So this is why I'm here now in St. Albans.
Amazing. Your passion is literally spilling out of you.
Oh, great. Thank you.
You talk about blending inner transformation with outer style. Can you explain what you mean by that in practice?
So in practice, I use transformation in multiple ways. What I'm trying to do first is to empower and to show tools and to show how to do fashion, how to do style with literally tools that you can apply every single day in your wardrobe, in your life, and also blending wellness in there as well. Because when you look good, you feel good. And when you feel good, you look good. So for me, I decided to create Elevated as a 360 approach just because that's how it works. And I really much have lovely ladies coming in lacking confidence and just needed to help refine their style, declutter their wardrobe. And I give them tools how to do that. And we do workshop based and we just empower them to go through that. And then I have a lot of clients that have in well-being coaching, just helping them, you know, to find the right goals for their life and the habit to sustain that. And how do we implement these in a sustainable way that will help make sure they are implemented long term. So this is how I blend all of this. And I aim to be here for my clients, to give them the tools and for them to be independent and run with it. I don't believe in they're so busy and they just need practical things they can apply. So this is my aim, is to just give them everything I know and then they feel confident and empowered to do whatever they need to be doing.
Wonderful. And is there you mainly work with women? Do you work with lots of mums? Obviously we have a lot of parents who listen to the show.
Yeah, so I mainly work with women. When a hubby or partner is asking for help, who am I to turn them down? I love helping them as well. But my core passion and my core love, obviously, is for women. I am a woman myself, and I aim to spread as much love and empowerment as possible, because that's not what we are living in the society. We don't have all of these cheerleaders behind us, and we're more pitting one against each other rather than empowering us and walking hand by hand and just telling ourselves that we are the best and we can achieve whatever we want to achieve. So this is why I chose mainly to work for women. I work with women from all ages and all sort of situations and challenges. My core audience is usually mums. After 1, 2, 3 kids, they are, you know, at this place where they've lost themselves a little bit because they are prioritizing everyone and their attention is brought up to everyone else but themselves. So healthier habits tend to slip at the bottom of the list. Their style is not who they are anymore. And their wardrobe are filled with stuff that is not representative of the woman they are today or the woman they would like to be. So this is usually where I come in. I come here and I help these lovely moms, these lovely women, and just help them to get through the next stage of their life and the next stage of what the elevated version of themselves look like in terms of fashion, but also in terms of health and wellness. What is the next step and how can I empower them to take this next step and accompany them every step of the way, basically.
Sounds wonderful. And so this kind of support that you offer to mums, women, through these sort of like challenges, big life transitions, really, yep, that they have gone through and now feel a little bit maybe disconnected from their style. So how do you actually support them? What's the process? What does it look like when somebody works with you?
Yeah, so there is not one process for all, because everything as I offer is bespoke. So how it usually works is with a conversation. We sit down, I offer a free 30-minute discovery call, and we discuss all of these lovely ladies' needs. She's talking to me about where she is at now, where she's been in the past, what she's struggling with, what the challenges are, and what her goals are now. And what I do is then I refine with her what type of service she needs, because sometimes it's all of them. So we just have to start somewhere that feels possible and that feels realistic to where they are right now. And then we have a chat where I offer what I think is the best outcome and the best service for their needs. And from there, I send, you know, an email just recapping everything we just talked about, what we discussed and the services I think is best for them, and they choose whatever they want to do. I'm aiming to make sure they're comfortable. It has to work in their timeline. It has to be the right moment. Otherwise, it's a waste of time for everyone, especially for them. And I'm conscious of that because they're so busy. And then we start from there. Whatever they need is either it's a wardrobe edit and reset where I come in and I bring some mood boards of what their style could be and the elevation of the style can go towards. And then we do the color analysis that is always included in the wardrobe reset or edit. And then we go through everything in the wardrobe. Piece by piece, we take everything out and we are thinking, do we keep this? Is it still serving us? Or actually, is it time to recycle and just give this thing a new life somewhere else? And just then, you know, if there is a piece here and there that they need help styling, we put them aside and we are going to do a little fashion show later where we're going to try bits. And then I put everything back. I reinstall a system for them that is easy to maintain and is organized, you know, by purpose, by color, and by season. So I'm passionate about the process because I'm a very organized person. So I just really like when I have them actually make dressing up in the morning a joyful and easy process rather than a nightmare and like, oh my God, what am I going to wear? And just go for the same things all over and over again.
I'm literally just thinking I'm wearing the same jumper as yesterday. Because I've just gone for the same quick and easy thing. Hello. Same jumper, same jeans. So interesting. I read also that you use something called Ikigai. Is that how you pronounce it?
Absolutely. Well then.
I've heard of it, but I don't really know what it is. Could you describe what that is and how you apply it?
Absolutely, darling. So I am deeply passionate about Japan for a really long time. I do speak Japanese as well and travel there every 2 years. And I came across a few years ago when I was doing some research about what am I going to do with my life? And I came across Ikigai. And Ikigai means reason for being. It's finding your purpose across four pillars that are interconnected. And you find your purpose when you are living a life aligned with your passions, what you're good at, what the world needs, and what you can be rewarded for. It applies for your personal life, for your professional life, or both. And I am a certified Ikigai life coach. And when I am working with my life coach clients, I have them going through finding everything that they love, they're good at, and what the world could need. And would they be able to do something with that, something they can be paid for with this passion? And if we struggle, you know, we're not looking for a job, we're just looking for purpose in life, it applies to personal life as well. And for me, through Ikigai, the main thing to remember is every single woman, every single mom has passions, has things they love to do and love taking care of themselves, but they don't have time and it's really busy and it's just a real struggle. So it's all about starting small and implementing maybe one little habit per week of doing something they love or taking a little care of themselves through an activity that they love. And so Ikigai can start from there. And just by, you know, adding a little pinch of salt of happiness and activities and hobbies that you really enjoy and really love is helping you live a more balanced life because, you know, life is like a wheel and there's lots of ways it's interconnected. When there's a few of them that are actually completely broken or out of balance, this is when the wheel starts to wobble. So when you're taking care of everyone and you're running after everything and you don't take care of yourself and you don't bring a bit of happiness to yourself, this is where you can be burnt out. And this is where you tend to not take care of your health either. And this is where anxiety comes sometimes. So this is what I'm trying to do with my client. And I'm also an Ikigai teacher at the Health Business School in London. And I teach every Friday to a lovely bunch of students. They're 18 to 23. And every week we go through a well-being practice that is going to help them live a happy, healthy, long life. And they're loving it. And I love teaching it as well.
Amazing. Woman of many talents. I felt quite emotional, actually, when you were talking about Ikigai, because I feel, you know, it's not that long ago I've stepped into my purpose of the work that I do and my day job. And I work with a lot of mothers and I see a lot of them struggling, finding that they're not fulfilling their purpose and things have really shifted since becoming a mother particularly. Yeah. So yeah, that feels, really resonates with me.
Yeah, that makes total sense, honestly. And it's really hard. It's, you know, living a life of balance and prioritizing yourself is really hard. But what I always try to help the woman and the mothers I work with is you have to put your own masks first. And I know, you know, that session where you can go in the gym and do that Pilates session that you really enjoy or the yoga session, and you feel a bit guilty because you're like, this could be some time I spend with my kids. But when you think about it as well, this is a time where you recharge. This is a time where you're prioritizing yourself, and this is your time you are getting stronger and therefore more resilient. And when you're going to come home, you're going to have more space to look at for these people, your lovely people, your tribe in your family. And you are also going to inspire your kids to do things that they love and do things that matches their identity and just make them proud and want to follow your footsteps. And that's something that I try to explain to my clients when they're like, yeah, but I can't take the hour for myself. Actually, you're doing everyone a service, yourself, but the people around you at the same time as well.
Yeah, 100%. I couldn't agree anymore. You know, role model the kind of human being you want your children to develop into.
Yeah. And especially in the society nowadays where it's very, you know, digital based and we have to be hyper productive and there's an immense expectations on women and little girls. So this is where us women and mothers have to make extra sure that we inspire them to be who they want to be, inspire them to show them that they can be anything, and mommy as well can be anything she wants to be. This is why, you know, I'm not personally a mom just yet, but this is why I'm working really, really hard every single day to be the best version of myself and making sure that I do things geared. I do them anyway. I started CrossFit at 28 and I'm now competing, and 28 is retirement age for athletes. So I started at retirement age, but I never once in a day, you know, I'm thinking to myself, I can't do that. I can't live that. I can do anything. And when we start this mindset of showing other women, showing other kids, and showing men around us, now we can do it and we're super strong. This inspires to create a strong woman community and empower each other to do all of these things.
Amazing. Yeah. Super inspiring. What with the work that you've been doing, what kind of transformations have you witnessed in the women you work with? Have you got some particular case studies or examples you could share?
Yeah, absolutely. There's two keywords that I will start with is confidence and clarity. When I work with mothers and they come to me, just as much as well being life coaching or styling, there is a lack of self-worth. There is a lack of self-confidence. And there is a taboo or a scare of how fashion and style works. Or how do I live a healthy life, you know? And so every single woman I worked with, I've been able to shift this mindset, declutter and re-explain and break down everything to show how easy it is, how there is no need to be scared of it, and just making it practical and achievable. And so many women, when they worked with me, they tell me, but what it's people around them that tell me and come back to me and said, I've never seen her so confident. Or, you know, I'm at a lot of networking events and I have some clients in networking events. And I have all of these lovely ladies coming back to me. This is not the same person. This person is glowing. This person is radiant. They know who they are and they know where they're going and they feel really good. And it's also about clarity. I have had a few mothers really struggling and needing some help on how to dress and how to make it easy. And just when I've been able to work with them on finding their style and break down how that looks like and sharing them all of the tools, they all mention how clear the process was and they know what to do and they know what to wear and they know how to do it. And there is this clarity that's emerged. Once before, it was struggle and it was overwhelm, and it evolved and then transformed into clarity and just quiet confidence. And that's what I usually achieve with my clients, and their partners see the change. And I often receive some photos of saying, oh my gosh, people stopped me in the streets and they told me I looked amazing. It's the first time that happened to me. So that generally makes me so happy that it has a really strong and positive impact on their lives.
Amazing. And if there's one thing you would want every woman listening to know, especially mums, to know or to remember about themselves, what would it be?
They can do anything they want to do. That is the absolute thing I want to say. It's just we are so scared and we tend to belittle ourselves and we tend to say that we're never enough and we tend to think that this is not possible. Actually, anything is possible. And in St. Albans, when you look around you and you look at all the business owners, all the amazing mothers, all the networking groups, everyone here has such a strong story and everyone here has completely reorganized their life, started from scratch at any age, at any time, at any condition or number of children in the family. And so there is never settle down and never think that your life is over or there's nothing more. There's always something more. And when you know when it's going to be menopause time, it's a rebirth, it's renewal. It's just changing your mindset to, I can do this and I'm looking forward to try new things and keep pushing myself and just keep exploring what our amazing bodies can do, because we use like 10% of our brains and our bodies. I can tell you how strong it can be when you work on it. I'm not saying everyone should be athletes. I'm just saying we are much stronger than we think we are. And there is no limit to what we can achieve. And it's just keeping this mindset forever. And yeah. If you're struggling to know what to do or finding a new, doing something new, try a new sport, try a new hobby, sit down and write down everything you're passionate about, everything you enjoy doing, and try to find a link together. Maybe choose something that is there. And when you enjoy things that you're doing and it's good for you and it's inspiring people around, then it's just a situation one, and it makes you feel amazing and powerful. And everyone deserves to feel empowered.
I love your energy, Clementine. It's so empowering.
Thank you so much. I'm just very passionate about what I do. And I'm very passionate about, I've applied all of these changes to myself. And I started from scratch. And I've lived a couple of lives. And I'm still very young. And I would never tell things that are not true, because I live them. So I always speak of honesty and I always speak of experience. So if I can do it, anyone can do it. And I can name 30 people, 30 beautiful women and mothers in St. Albans that are strong powerhouses and have redone their lives and keep pushing every single day. And it's inspiring to have all of these women around you.
Amazing. So how can people find out more about your work and get in touch with you? And is the work available just in person, or do you do online as well?
Yeah, I do in person and online. So it really depends on the budget and time. Anything can happen. And anything, as I mentioned, is bespoke. So you can find me on Instagram. This is where I'm the most active. It's Elevated by Clementine. That's my handle. I have a podcast where every week I release a new healthier habits that you could be implementing and why, and sharing tips that are actually realistic to implement. And yeah, there's my website. All of the information are there. You can contact me by email at hello@elevatedbyclementine.co.uk, and we can start on a free discovery call and have a lovely conversation. You can hear a bit of French accent if that's something that you like. And I will give you all of my energy and try to make you smile and empowered as much as possible.
Thank you so much, Clementine. I found this conversation so inspiring and energizing, and I'm sure our listeners will too. Thank you for the work you are doing to empower women, mothers in our community. And thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much. I had a great time and I wish you all the best.
You've been listening to The Parent Show on Mix 92.6. Today, I was joined by Clementine, founder of Elevated by Clementine, talking about identity, confidence, and supporting women, especially mothers, to reconnect with themselves through style, life coaching, and more. Clementine also shares some powerful insights into the challenges many mums face and how small shifts can create meaningful transformation. I feel super inspired and energized by this conversation, and I hope you feel that too. You can find out more about her work and how to connect with her through her website and social media. I'm Elisa Karkar. I'll be back next time with more honest conversations to support and inspire you on your parenting journey. Until next time, take care.
Elisa was talking to Clementine there from Elevated by Clementine. Clementine is holding a Spring 26 Trend online masterclass on the 8th of April if you'd like to join. You can get all the details at our website, elevatedbyclementine.co.uk. And there's just time to mention another event that you might like to go to. On Saturday, the 4th of April at 7 p.m, Band Against Cancer is a night at the Pioneer Club here in St Albans. An unforgettable night of live music with a powerful purpose. Organised by Watford resident Gracie Pugh, now 19 and in remission after bravely battling cancer at just 16, the event raises vital funds for Teenage Cancer Trust. It features four fantastic local bands: Baby Step, Dead the Will, The Evening and The Limestones, plus DJs Oscar Whalen and DJ CB. Tickets are just £10 and all proceeds go to the Teenage Cancer Trust. Grab your tickets now via the Pioneer Club website at pioneerclub.co.uk/pioneer-events.
The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. Sponsored by Raiden Solicitors. Award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.